what?
Looking every inch the academic he once had been, Doc peered down his long nose at the source of the interruption.
Been gone for 2 hours now.
The boy was standing at the entrance flap of the tent, his head cocked at an angle, one hand on his hip and the other holding open the flap. For a brief moment, Doc had thought that Ryan himself had already returned from his journey to the lair of Poseidon. Dean had the same sharp, narrow face, the same deep-set dark eyes, the same curly black hair, the same confidence that some would see as insolence.
I'm well aware of the passage of time.
What's the book?
A collection of poetry by T.S. Eliot. The title of the collection is The Wasteland and Other Poems.
Sounds like Deathlands.
Yes, well, this is apt reading in our surroundings.
Where'd you get it?
They have a small library here. Mostly tripe. Blood and thunder adventure novels about men with action verbs for names, and pink and lavender-tinged bodice rippers of true historical romance. I noticed the bindings of the trashier books were the most worn, while this handsome gray and black thin little gem is still somewhat in one piece. Yes, a few worthy tomes were in the strongbox, and I couldn't resist reacquainting myself with Mr. Elliot's wonderfully written wisdom.
Yeah, well, you ready?
For what?
Ready to go! I've been watching you, Doc. You're tougher than you look. You can walk.
Thank you for the compliment, young man. Still, there's nothing we can do but wait, just as your father told you to do.
Walking will do you some good. We both know Dad's had enough time to get well ahead of us, Doc. He's probably already half there.
Perhaps, perhaps not. Voyages into the lion's den sometimes take longer than planned. Besides, I spoke with your father before his departure, and he said you had agreed to wait 2 days. A double hold is how he put it to me.
Actually, he said a couple of days, Doc. Or maybe he said a couple of hours. The way I look at it, a couple hours have long passed. Now, are you coming, or do you want to stay here with the muties and the peace lovers?
You would do well to speak to your elders with a touch more respect, Dean. As evidenced yesterday with our hostess, and now with me, you shall live much longer. I rather liked your flattery from a few moments ago. I would recommend you go back to the ploy of attempting to attract with sweet honey, as opposed to vocal vinegar.
No ploys! You coming or staying?
I'm trying to read. Readers are more educated, and as such, tend to be survivors.
Yeah, well, we can't live forever, Doc. Even a time-traveling dog like you.
Doc reopened the book and tried very hard to concentrate on the words of Eliot, one of the few poets from the 20th century that Doc actually liked. But the poetry kept sliding off the page and out of his mind. Instead, he imagined Ryan's reaction if he found out that Dean had been allowed to go off into the unknown alone.
I grow old, I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled.
Doc pondered this passage for a full 60 seconds before he stood.
I shall not. And yes, Mr. Elliot, I, Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner, do indeed dare to eat a peach.
When Doc walked outside the tent, the Lamar secure on his leg and the familiar black walking stick in hand, Dean was waiting.
Figured you might come around.
Have I become that predictable?
No, but I was counting on you doing the right thing.
The right thing is remaining here, safe and snug and fed. But our friends have left us, and I suppose someone must play the role of cavalry.
That's what I think.
Let me return this book, and we shall be on our way.
Doc stepped past the boy and headed for the storage tent where he had browsed through the small commune library.
What changed your mind?
The mermaids, lad. The mermaids started singing to me.
Dean shook his head. There were times that Doc didn't make a bit of sense.
Why don't you keep the book, Doc? I doubt they'd ever miss it.
Perhaps not. But who knows how many copies of this wonderful work survived the end of the civilized world? No, Mr. Elliot is much safer here with these good people than with me.
After Doc returned the copy of the book, he headed back toward the main road.
Wrong way!
What are you talking about?
Come on, I'll show you.
The boy headed for the northern side of the commune, where the small farm and gardens were maintained.
Excuse me, young Dean, but I believe the road to our destination is that way.
Doc pointed southward.
Got something to pick up first. Found out about it last night from Chico.
Who is Chico?
The pair now approached a small fenced area. A young Mexican boy about Dean's age was standing at the gate.
He's Chico. He lives here on the commune. I met him last night where you were all meeting. I had a feeling Dad was going to stick me here while he went after that bastard who killed Christy and Jack, so I talked to Chico about my problem.
What did he say?
He didn't. He brought me here and introduced me to Santos.
The two boys stepped through the gate, and Doc followed. Inside the ring was a massive gray Appaloosa with a thick neck and stocky body.
Meet Santos. Chico is going to let me borrow him. Santos belonged to Chico's dad, who was one of the people chilled here a few years back by Poseidon.
A most magnificent, not to mention massive, creature.
He can hold us both with no problem.
If you intended to travel by horseback, why did you lead me to think we were going to be walking?
Wanted to know how serious you were. If you were going to walk, I knew you weren't going to try and talk me out of going.
It is not my role to talk you out of anything. I am not your parent.
Aces on the line, Doc. That's what I thought.
Doc took Dean to one side, away from the boy and the animal.
And how do you propose to return this animal in case, well, you know?
There's an old burned-out gas station on the way to the base. Chico's rode that far without his mom knowing. We're going to leave Santos there. If we haven't returned in a day or so, Chico will come out and get the horse back.
Doc scratched his head.
You are a master schemer, Dean. I am not so sure expanding your education at the Brody School was such a good idea after all.
What can you tell me about this nuke sub Poseidon's got?
Edgerton stayed silent, his body bouncing in the seat as the wag made its way back down the old two-lane blacktop toward King's Point.
Name, rank, and serial number is all you're gonna get, Caldor. That was the drill when I ran with Poseidon.
You were a merc for him?
JB spoke from the driver's seat of the wag.
For about a year. Got tired of that pecking order. Besides, I hate taking orders. I heard about the commune upstate and decided that way life sounded a lot more appealing.
Did you ever get near the sub?
No. I wasn't classified. It's a big bastard, between 500 and 600 yards long. Supposed to run off a pressurized water reactor. That's what's powered by the new generator. As I understand it, and he did give us a briefing one time in case things went to hell in a hurry, inside the reactor are fuel rods that produce the needed energy by nuclear fission. The water from the pressurizer is superheated in the reactor core and passed to a heat exchanger where it creates the steam to power the turbines.
What happens if the nuke engines go offline?
Sub should have backup diesel engines in case the reactor fails. The trick there is fuel. But I know Poseidon must have an ample supply since he's been running these wags back and forth.
You want us to try and take out the sub first or the buildings?
Buildings. Or any big wags you see like this one. Submarine pens will be closely watched, but other sections are left open, since there's nothing worth stealing. Hit as many as you can, and make damn sure the timers are synchronized.
All in the wag but Edgerton checked their crons.
Come midnight, we're out of there and back to the wag. Even if all of the objectives aren't met.
They will be.
The last remnants of the compassionate woman the group had first met slid away, and were replaced with the mindset of an assassin.
Ryan and I have our own assignment.
Sure you don't want to help us out, Edgerton? You've seen what these blasters can do. Three of your pals down and dead. Could go easier for you if you cooperate.
No, sir.
Fine. Keep your secrets. I've never been a man for torture.
Hold up. Coming up on something that looks like it might be the place.
Carter stepped forward for a look through one of the Land Rover's numerous obslits.
Right, Dix. There's the rear gate. They should be expecting us with the fish fry.
Okay, JP. You and Edgerton here are going to switch places. Here's the drill. If Edgerton gets cued or tries to warn the guard at the gate in the booth, I chill him.
Ryan stared the younger man down.
Edgerton takes us in and parks the wag in the normal drop spot. We tie him up, and he lives to drive another day.
Ryan put on the mirrored sunglasses and helmet and took the passenger seat, aiming the muzzle of the Sig Sauer at Edgerton's right side, just out of the field of vision if the man on the gate got too curious. JB joined Mildred, Carter, and Shauna in the rear of the wag, hidden until the door was opened and they chose to reveal themselves.
Take us in.
Edgerton hesitated. Ryan poked him in the ribs with a Sig Sauer.
I said take us in. But if you want to live, you get us into the base without a firefight. If this gets fucked up, I'll chill you myself.
4 minutes later, everything that could have gone wrong did, and they were captured. Ryan and Shauna were led up to the top floor of the building. They were placed in front of an ornate oak door and made to wait while one of their captors went inside to announce their arrival. He returned, crooking a finger for them to enter.
Welcome to Kings Point, Georgia, home and birth of the USS Raleigh. My name is Poseidon. You may address me as Admiral.
Ryan stared contemptuously at the man. The white-hot rage that he always tried to keep strapped down within his soul came bubbling up freely, and he embraced it. He wanted his anger worn close, sharp and hot and piercing. Christy and Jack were dead because of this egomaniac's paranoia, and no amount of discussion of motive or happenstance or fate was going to change that fact. The woman at his side felt exactly the same way. Her intense hatred of Poseidon was radiating off her trim body in waves.
Oh my, I really haven't made either of your hit parades, have I?
Come a little closer and uncuff me, and I'll beat you to death with my fists. Then you'll be on my hit parade.
It's not that kind of parade, dear Shauna. Then again, I suppose music appreciation is well beyond both of your savage intellects. At times such as these, I know my tiny radio station here exists for my enjoyment and my enjoyment alone.
Admiral, you want me to stay?
Yes, for now. Sit down, you two.
Neither Ryan nor Shauna moved. The sec man poked Ryan in the back with the nose of his weapon.
Go on, sit. You heard the Admiral?
Admiral, my ass.
Ryan went ahead and eased into the plush chair. Beside him, a few feet away, Shauna did the same awkward movement since her hands were bound behind her back. Ryan rolled the word Admiral around in his head. He had always despised titles. Captains and kings, chiefs and colonels, bosses and barons. Times changed, but the power-hungry types remained the same. Give a man enough money or power, and he always had the urge to elevate his station. Rank didn't mean a thing when it came to living or dying, especially a self-imposed rank of authority in a long-dead military.
I see you doubt my credentials, Mr. Ryan Cawdor. Are you the jealous type? Does my position threaten your own sense of leadership?
Ryan was surprised that the Admiral knew his name, but kept his acknowledgement of the revelation close to the vest.
Not at all. Call yourself Emperor of all Deathlands if that's what gets you off. The way I see it, an asshole's an asshole, even in a fancy uniform.
Poseidon kept the wide smile, but a flinty spark of anger flared in his dark eyes. Ryan knew right then that this was not a man used to being spoken to or challenged.
Ah, the service could have done wonders with your aggression, Cawdor.
I doubt it.
No. Becoming a member of the naval fleet would have molded you. The proper instruction and informed care could have made something more out of you than just a grubby lander with a blaster in his pocket.
Well, I never was much of a follower. Especially if the commanding officer was a regimented old fuck like you.
Poseidon's face was rectangular, with a wide, tall forehead topped off by a steel-gray buzz cut. His eyebrows were a darker gray than the salt-and-pepper mix of his hair. Depending on how he held his head, the man's eyes seemed to be an asphalt shade of gray, but they shifted back and forth into a near blackness as Poseidon spoke, changing color with his mood. His eyes were shining black now. His cheeks appeared to be pitted with the sort of skin craters associated with chronic teenage acne, although the close-cut full beard he wore helped to cover any imperfections. Other than a nose that had been broken at least once in Poseidon's so-called naval career, and a pair of ears too small in proportion to the rest of his massive body, the man was more than merely impressive. He was roguishly handsome. Ryan wanted to pick up the nearest blunt object and begin to smash that handsome face into a mess of blood and gore. But he held back, and instead estimated how quickly he could gut the big man from sternum to chin if given half a chance. He didn't want to shoot Poseidon. He wanted to kill him up close and personal with his bare hands, soak the naval whites of the Admiral's uniform in bright red blood. But he curbed the impulse. Mildred, JB, and Carter were still unaccounted for, and Ryan knew he'd have to play the game for now. Men such as Poseidon seemed to be compelled to strut and show off their manhood whenever someone like Ryan stumbled into their camps. They weren't content to offer either a hand of friendship or the business end of a weapon. No, their joy came in preening. The megalomaniacal always wanted to show off either their brilliance or their possessions. The chairs Ryan and Shauna had finally sat in were made of mahogany, with black padded leather on the seat and arms. The immense desk across from them was made of the same wood and glowed with a sheen of polish. The room had a nautical feel, paintings of ancient whaling ships, a tapestry of old Western-style paddleboat steamer, ship instruments mounted on plaques. Elaborate models of submarines of the past lined the back-windowed wall, beginning with one model identified as the squat turtle, an early craft used in 1776 by the Continental Army to attack the HMS Eagle.
I see you've noticed my display of submarines.
Hard to miss it.
Right so, right so. Tell me, Mr. Cawdor, did you know that the roots of the modern submarine can be traced all the way back to the days of Alexander the Great?
I must have been absent that day from history class. Or asleep.
Legend has it that Alexander descended into the ocean in the year 332 BC in a primitive diving bell. Such courage! To allow oneself to vanish beneath the waves during such an early and superstitious time of man. I'm sure even one as brave as he must have been questioning his own sanity once he was lowered.
You might think about doing the same.
Me? I've spent more time underwater than above.
I think he meant the part about questioning your sanity.
As time passed, others contributed. But it took a true military mind to seize the opportunities a submarine offered. A Dutch physicist, Cornelis Drebbel, actually built a working submersible with the design specifically created to destroy his opponents. But it took an American to actually make the concept workable.
Yeah, the good old US of A has done right by me. Done right by all of us. One hell of a legacy. Purple Mountain's majesty and all.
Don't bash America, Cawdor. Especially if your opinion has no research to back it up.
America, love it or leave it, right?
That's one way of looking at this great land of ours, yes. Now, where was I? Oh, right. In the eventful year of 1776, a Yale University student named David Bushnell designed the Turtle, a simple one-man submersible boat with the ability to sneak under a ship, plant a waterproof time bomb onto the bottom of the hull, and escape before the explosion. Sheer genius.
I'm sure it worked out fine.
Not exactly. The sub didn't function as planned in combat. Still, the germ of the idea was there. And American inventors continued to work toward creating a submarine that could actually sink an enemy vessel. Two world wars later, with the added bonus of the discovery of nuclear fuels and weapons, and the submarines became the most powerful part of any modern fleet.
As I understand it, they also ushered in the new cost.
Quite right. In fact, your presence here has enabled me to accelerate my own timetable to test the capabilities of the Raleigh.
You've got nukes?
A nuke. A single Tomahawk missile, but I'm negotiating for more. I'm hoping Mr. Cawdor will be able to assist in that quest.
You go to hell. Ryan got to his feet. I don't know if anyone has bothered to point this out to you, Admiral, but the last war ended the need for submarines. I'm skipping out on the rest of the presentation about the good old days. You can save it for the starry-eyed recruits and Sekhmen you've got running this dump.
Sit down, Cawdor.
Poseidon nodded to the guard behind Ryan. The guard lashed out with the butt of his gun, catching the standing man above the kidneys. Ryan reluctantly took the Admiral's advice as he shakily sat back in the chair.
Sit down and tell me why you show such animosity for me. I admit my reputation is marred with innuendo and lies.
I never even heard of you until I put in at Shauna's place.
I find that hard to believe.
Believe it. Your reputation must need some extra promoting. Hire yourself a storyteller, plop him into one of your wags, and let him travel around Deathland singing your praises.
If you want to hold back even the barest whiff of a compliment, that's your business. I'm above such petty role-playing.
Oh, bullshit! Role-playing is what gets you off. I'm sure you're waving a giant hard-on over having me tied to a chair. A helpless woman is the classic male power fantasy.
Poseidon approached the woman. Ryan noted as he got a better look at his opponent's build that the man was big, but not fat. Poseidon had never been small, even as a child. Ryan knew that the man would have been noticed in any ordinary group for his height and girth. He looked to be nearly 6.5 feet tall, and his weight had to be around 300 pounds of solid bulk.
Tell me, Shauna, do you still harbor resentment over your husband's death? Is that why you've brought this man here to assist in assassinating me?
Shauna was quiet.
What has she told you, Cawdor? That I killed her husband? Took her authority? Ha! Saved her pathetic little community is more like it.
Yeah. I've heard about how well you've been keeping an eye on the seafood. Not a flounder was overlooked.
Why are you here anyway, Cawdor? I know Shauna doesn't have the necessary funds to hire you.
Ryan kept silent. He almost said to chill you, but managed to restrain himself.
Fate has placed you within my hands for a reason. Yes, you might think you're here merely to take up some kind of cause against me, but I know better.
My boat ran up on a stinking mine out near the commune. It was during that storm that swept through here last week. The mine blew my ride all to hell.
That was your boat, you say? I wondered what had set off the charge.
Your mine's killed my woman, Poseidon.
Nonsense! I've killed no one close to you.
You destroyed the most valuable piece of my life over greed and paranoia. Now I'm here to destroy you.
So you say.
There's no reason to be mining the Georgia coastline in the first place. Who do you think is going to attack? The commies?
Actually, it had crossed my mind, dear girl. However, the mines were planted there not so much to keep people out, but to keep your rabble on land.
You're insane, Poseidon! You get more crazy every waking moment of your murderous life!
I knew it. You are still annoyed over the removal of your husband.
I swore I'd kill you. If there's any justice in heaven, I'll see the day pass where you're dead at my feet.
Poseidon shook his head and shrugged his massive shoulders. He looked at Ryan for agreement as he spoke.
Eric Watson challenged me. I fought back. He lost. End of transaction. Women take these things much too seriously. That's one reason I don't allow them on the base.
I have my own theory about that, sailor boy.
You're wrong, Carter. About a lot of things.
He came to talk with you in peace and you killed him. Admit it!
I thought I already had. Still, I don't need this muty-loving slut making accusations or telling me what to do.
Poseidon's hand snapped down and clasped Shauna around the neck.
Who's killing who now, Shauna, huh?
Ryan reared to his feet like a surprised stallion, slamming his body toward Poseidon, but the butt of the Sekhman's rifle caught him once again. Ryan watched as Poseidon's vice-like hands tightened and lifted up the dying woman from the chair. Shauna barely had enough life left to struggle. Her legs kicked once, twice, then hung limp.
Too late, Carter. Much too late. Remove that.
He watched him passively as the Sekhman carried Shauna's lifeless body out of the office.
Is that how you inspire loyalty in your little navy? Killing anyone who gets in your way?
I do what it takes. My enjoyment of such actions is an occasional rare bonus. That bitch had been plotting against me for far too long. The female mind is unfathomable.
Well, I'm always impressed when a guy strangles a helpless woman to death. That's three I owe you for now.
Three?
Three.
As I was saying earlier, my reputation is marred with innuendo and lies. But so is your own.
What do you mean?
I've heard of you and your little mercenary group.
Don't believe everything you hear.
Oh, I never do. Besides, as they used to say back in wartime, loose lips sink ships. Still, just between you and me...
Ryan glanced at the grim Sekhman who had just returned after removing Shauna's body.
Never mind Jonesy. He hears what I tell him to, right, Jonesy?
Hear what, sir?
Good man. Now, back to our discussion. There's change in the wind, Carter. Wild cards such as yourself are due to be eliminated. The more powerful of the barons are starting to communicate for the first time in decades. They speak on a regular basis by radio and through intermediaries via traveling caravans. And do you know why?
They were getting lonely?
Scuttle the sarcasm, Cardor. You don't have the timing for it. No, they're starting to align themselves for protection from murderous thugs like you. Self-serving renegades who roam deathlands in packs like mangy wolves, slinking into law-abiding vills and stealing food and supplies.
You're crazier than I thought.
Don't mock civilization, Carter. It's what makes man rise above the animals.
Civilization is also what destroyed the world. As I understand it, the barons in power back then didn't bother to ask anybody's permission when they wanted to do something, and it's still the same today. Once a baron gets some food in his stomach and some property in the Jack to hire a sex squad, he stops listening to anyone but himself.
But the ones in power will listen to their peers.
I doubt it. Most of the vills I've been in have been hotbeds of hatred and inbreeding. There's no way in hell there's going to be any sort of alliance.
You're not thinking, Cawdor, that, or you're just being thick to annoy me. As many barons and vills as you and your merry band of outlaws have brought down, how could you expect otherwise? You aren't alone in spreading the seed of destruction, nor are you the first. There have always been the fringe elements who refuse to conform.
Ryan got to his feet and sat back in the chair. He He leaned back and swung up one of his long legs, placing his boot heel on top of Poseidon's desk.
Those arrogant bastards in charge of their pissant baronies and vills couldn't stop shouting and posing long enough to make a group decision on what kind of meat to serve at their first meal, much less come to any kind of agreement.
I shall be a part of a grand new alliance, where a council of baronies shall rule. I am at the forefront of the new wave to help reconnect the world.
How?
The sea, Cawdor, the sea. No air travel, no safe and efficient way to crawl across the radiation pits scarring the landscape. What does that leave?
Let me guess. The sea.
Correct! From the day man crawled up from the muck and the slime onto dry land, the control of the seas from whence he sprang has meant dominance. All the great generals from all the great wars have been forced to take possession of the waters surrounding their territories, their lands. And once they lost the sea, they lost the war, and they lost their command. I have no intention of losing my power, Cawdor, only increasing it.
With a bunch of hired mercs who would just as soon chill you as follow an order? I don't think so. And I wouldn't count on any vills backing up your master plan either. People always look out for number one, Poseidon. You're living proof of that.
Fear has a way of creating strange bunkmates, and I wonder how my standing in their eyes will increase once I present you for their entertainment.
Bring it on.
However, I indeed do tend to look out for myself, as you pointed out. That's why I collect reports, oral tales of a one-eyed man bringing retribution across the scarred lands of what's left of this great country of ours. And I have to dismiss much of it as fictions created beside a warm fire to amuse. Or do I?
You tell me.
The primary reason the reports are not to be believed is due to sheer logistics. You appear one day in West Virginia, and then a week later you're spotted in New Mexico. Reports have you in Maine, then you show up within days in Snakefish, California. And I think, how? How is this possible? I think to myself, could there be more than one man claiming to be Ryan Cawdor?
Looks like you caught me. I'm twins. You can tell us apart by the eye patches. My brother wears his on the right eye. Says it's his best side.
You'll shut up or I'll finish blinding you myself. Then it occurs to me, why not combine one tall tale with a second? There have been rumors of a futuristic method of traveling, a teleportation device ripped from the pages of old science fiction novels. None of my contacts have ever seen or encountered anyone with first-hand knowledge. So all I have is theory, rumor, innuendo. Now I have someone with that first-hand knowledge.
I'm afraid I'm going to be a colossal disappointment.
My plan to master the seas is one thing, but if I can control any who would challenge me with the forbidden secrets of instantaneous land travel, then I shall be master of the entire world, both surface and underwater.
Good fucking luck.
You're the luck I needed, Cawdor. You are the key to the gateways.
Ryan felt his bravado sink down into his boots. The son of a bitch knew.
Take your best shot, Admiral. I have nothing to say to you.
Then perhaps I have another way of convincing you.
Poseidon sat back down and pressed a button on a desk intercom.
Bring in our guest.
Gonna kill another woman to try and show me the error of my ways?
There's an interesting fact about the sea, Cawdor. Things can be thrown into the depths and never seen again. Or things can be thrown into the depths only to be found by those who know what to look for. In fact, life in Deathlands is much like life at sea. You scavenge and try to live off the remains of the past, am I right?
If I say yes, will you spare me another lecture?
Come. Ah, Commander Brosnan. Glad you could join us. Mr. Cawdor isn't being cooperative. I need a persuader. Do you have it?
Outside, Admiral.
Then bring in the lady, please.
Ryan turned and discovered for once in his life he was struck totally speechless.
I believe you know Miss Roth.
We've met.
I thought you were dead.
I was. Not anymore.
Take her back to the brig, the secure cell. You may leave the albino where he is. See that she gets anything she wants. Food, drink, vids. Keep her happy and safe. However, double the watch.
just in case Mr. Carter gets any foolish notions.
Yes, sir, Admiral.
The commander gestured with a curled thumb, and the two armed escorts backed Christie out of the room. Brosnan turned to close the door behind their departure, and the room fell silent.
Yes, you never know what's going to turn up in the sea.
You were there, the night the mine blew up our boat.
Yes and no. I was there after the explosion, beneath the ocean and the storm in the mini-sub. A routine cruise interrupted by your stumbling into my domain.
You're scum.
Don't go all sanctimonious on me. You're the one who rode in here, destroying my property and killing my men. That whore from upstate? No loss. Her husband? He's the one who came in here making demands of me. Me! So I keel-hauled his whiny ass and gave him 50 lashes, and he couldn't take it. I saved her, Carter, along with that white freak. You owe me.
I owe you, Dick.
Then perhaps I'll take her back where I found her, half-drowned, unconscious, and dying.
Poseidon reached over and grabbed Ryan by the hair and bent him back over the top of his chair.
Don't try and bluff me, you snot-nosed punk. I'll break you like a glass bottle if you keep sassing me. That raspy voice and eye patch may frighten the ignorant and the stupid, but they hold no truck with me.
Just what in the fuck do you want from me?
Information.
Such as?
Numerals. Symbols. The arcane scripture from the world when mankind was still in command of his manifest destiny.
Could you be a little more specific?
Certainly. I want you to tell me everything, Carter. But first, what do you know about the access codes needed to get into a military redoubt?
Ryan was alive. Alive! The thought wouldn't leave Christie's brain. He was alive and Poseidon had lied. Christie couldn't be sure if Ryan had just arrived or had previously been on the base. Her instincts told her the former. Otherwise, the Admiral wouldn't have brought her in to show off like a prize heifer. She was smart enough to know when she was being used as a bargaining chip. The question was, why? What could he want or need from Ryan to use her as a hostage? After allowing her and Ryan to glimpse each other, Poseidon had ordered her jailers to march her back, but not to the hospital psych ward where she'd been previously kept with Jack. This time, she was walked across the compound to a flat, ugly building made of the same off-white stone as the rest of the base. Apparently, this had once been a mass of offices and tiny cloth-walled cubicles. Inert computer terminals were in each little half-room. Some of the desks still held photographs in frames, or other personal mementos that were very different from the ones she was used to seeing inside the utilitarian military redoubts. Two cells had been assembled at the end of the largest central conference room. Christie had seen this type of setting before. Once this was a building used for the conducting of military business. Now, a part of it had been remodeled as a brig for those who displeased Poseidon.
Sit tight, bitch. We got some smoking plans for you once Carter shows the Admiral where the fireworks are hidden.
The leering sec man gave her a shove, and she half fell, half stepped into the windowless room. The man who had pushed her had answered part of her question. Christie was being held to force Ryan to show Poseidon where something was hidden. She decided to play dumb. She didn't turn back or give off an angry retort to the sec man. If she kept quiet, perhaps he would stupidly say more. She merely went over and sat on the small mattress on the floor in the corner of the room. She attempted to wear her best beaten-down expression, the wilted flower, the helpless woman, whatever was most convincing. Unfortunately for her plans, the sec man chose not to gloat anymore. Christie Roth wasn't a passive type of woman. She was ready to go on the offensive. If she could escape, her value as a wedge would cease to exist, and Ryan would be free from his obligation to help Poseidon in exchange for her safety. Her green eyes closed to slits. She wasn't seeing the outside world anymore. She was looking within.
Earth Mother, help me. Aid me now, Gaia. Help me and give me the strength.
Christie had been trained since childhood to tune into the electromagnetic energies of the great Earth Mother, Gaia. By tapping into these hidden pools of energy, Christie sacrificed her humanity to become a creature with the strength of a sheer force of nature, but only for a limited time. And the transformation took a terrific toll on her physical and mental well-being. She hoped that she would be strong enough to free herself now.
Help me, Earth Mother. I need your embrace. Aid me now, Gaia. Help me and give me the strength. From the center of the world to souls of your children, give me the power.
What's that?
What?
I hear scratching.
Oh, probably rats. This building is crawling with the bastards. Screw them. Sit down, we'll play a hand of cards or something.
The older man had stepped up to the door of the cell now and placed his ear against it.
It sounds like they're inside with the girl.
Lucky them.
Think they could hurt her?
Nah, not as long as she don't turn her back on them. Besides, what the hell difference does it make? Once the Admiral gives the order, we're gonna pull a fuck train on that little morsel. It'll cause her to be walking on her hands for months afterward.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that. I haven't gotten laid in months.
Hell yeah! I heard that, bro. You know how Poseidon feels about women. Thinks they carry a disease. Said we could do as we wished, long as we wore protection. Protection? She's gonna need it. I'm gonna ride that bitch so hard, she's liable to split in two. God damn, but I love the military.
Fade walked over to Murphy.
Take a seat, Pops. Let me take a listen. If there are rats in there, I don't want them touching that girl before I do.
Murphy sat at the small industrial green desk and picked up the deck of well-worn playing cards. The middle drawer of the desk was crammed full with old porn mags that were near rags, and various other sedentary amusements to help pass the time when watching over a prisoner. Meanwhile, Fade listened.
Nothing.
No, you gotta bend down. The sound is coming down lower. You think rats could be standing 6 feet high or what?
Fade shot his companion a glare, but went ahead and got down on his knees. He leaned into the door, and damned if the older guy wasn't right. He pressed his ear closer, and waited for the noises to start a second time. Now, the sec man was on the floor, and a jagged hole was where the cell door had been. Standing there, framed in the ruin and still wearing the beatific smile, was Christy.
Knock, knock.
In the killing state of mind that Christy had been forced to induce within herself, the sec men who had brought her here and locked her away were now moving in slow motion. Pathetic. The red mist of death swamped Christy's mind. There would be no reasoning with her now. No mercy. Fade was the first to die. He had managed to move the broken door from his body and crawl away, scuttling on his hands and knees to a point where he could spin and pump a full clip of hot ammo into this crazy bitch. Christy's right boot shot out, catching Fade in the ear and jaw. Murphy looked at the scene, at his partner, and his mouth dropped open. How hard had she kicked Fade anyway? What the fuck was in the toes of those boots? He'd never seen anything like this in all of his 44 years of existence.
I'm sorry!
Behind him, Murphy didn't look back. He'd seen more than enough. The empty, smiling expression on the woman's face coming up behind him was etched forever in his memory. He staggered, trying to keep his balance and hoping he wouldn't fall. When he felt her iron fingers bite down on his shoulder and lift him bodily into the air, it was almost a blessing. The world was concrete, stone hard and cool to the touch. The steps, the walls, even the low ceilings were all made of the same flat, blue-gray concrete. Flickering fluorescent track lighting showed the path downward, along with helpful painted arrows on the walls. Poseidon, still in full-dress uniform, led the way, followed by the tall, broad-shouldered sec man that had previously been keeping watch over Ryan. Poseidon had called the man Jonesy. Ryan, his hands cuffed behind his back, was third in line. The rear was brought up by a second merc with thick eyeglasses and blonde hair, who wore civilian garb. The man with the glasses hadn't volunteered a name, nor had Poseidon offered one. Ryan dubbed him Specs. JB wouldn't have been amused, but Ryan figured that his being down an eye to the armorers, too, allowed him to say whatever he wished about anyone with glasses.
More hired help. Couldn't get him to sign up for the draft either, huh?
Mercenaries are a necessary evil, as is so much else these days. I buy all of my men's loyalties in different ways, Carter. All leaders do. I'm sure you have ways of binding your own people to your allegiance.
My people are my friends. There's a difference. But you wouldn't understand that.
And the woman? I can understand the need for physical companionship. She's one hell of a looker, so I know the sex must be good. But she's your Achilles heel, Cawdor.
My what?
Your weakness.
Shows what you know. With her, I'm twice as strong as when I'm alone. Before her, I was a man with no direction. Now I know who I am and who I hope to become someday. I'm willing to risk having an Achilles heel for that.
Then you're half the leader I've been told you were, and a fool.
Poseidon fell silent, and their trek downward continued. If Doc had been with the four men, he wouldn't have been able to resist comparing the length of their descent into the mass of damp-walled tunnels and dimly lit sub-basements beneath the naval base to Dante's plunge into the Inferno. The only difference was the temperature of the air. Cool air. And while it wasn't exactly fresh, it was breathable, just like the air in the redoubts. Ryan glanced up at the join where the walls met the ceiling. Small metal slits were embedded in the concrete. Air ducts kept everything flowing.
Nuke Jin.
Beg pardon?
Nothing.
No, Mr. Cawdor, I distinctly heard you mumble something in that monotone you call a speaking voice. Nuke Jin were your words, I believe. I just wanted to say your theory is correct. At least, as correct as I have been able to surmise without actual admittance into the hidden chambers below this base.
Ryan pondered the truth of Poseidon's statement. No wonder the Kings Point Naval Base had been able to survive as a working facility. Maintenance was much easier with electricity, and the nuclear generators that powered the Matrans unit inside the gateways had plenty of energy to spare. If Poseidon was to be believed, and if there was indeed a gateway chamber hidden down in the maze of sub-basements they were currently in, then this would be one of the rare instances where a redoubt was housed in a logical locale, as opposed to a lonely facility stuck away in the middle of nowhere, or inside a public place like the swamps of Green Glades. And then, without fanfare, they arrived. Ryan stood before the familiar shape of a redoubt entrance door, and yet it was obviously a modification of the standard configuration, probably due to its location. He closed his eye and reopened it slowly. The door was still there, waiting, like Poseidon and his two Sekhmen.
Uncuff Mr. Cawdor, but take care. He is supposed to be a master of hand-to-hand combat.
Specs unlocked the handcuffs. Ryan rubbed his sore wrists as he stared at the door.
Your circulation should be fine. Open the door.
Ryan hesitated.
Is there a problem?
Never seen one like this before. Looks different.
The vanadium steel door recessed into the back wall of the sub-basement was similar to the other ones Ryan had opened before, except for the color, which was a bright stoplight green, and the shape, which was hexagonal. The controls looked the same numeric keypad to punch in the entry code. Some of the numbers appear to have been worn down from use.
Don't delay, Cawdor. Open the door and let's be done with it. You have my word, your woman isn't going to be harmed as long as you do as I say.
Mental images of Shauna Watson, dead in her chair, went through Ryan's mind. The word of a madman.
What's in here you want so badly? The Matrans units don't even work right, and half the time they're broken.
Still, they are obtainable, and I want them. Plus, I am aware of the massive stockpiles of weapons these redoubts may hold. I need nukes, Cawdor. My submarine needs nukes. Even as we speak, I have a crew on board the Raleigh awaiting my return. If I find what I seek within this hideaway, we shall depart on our test mission as scheduled.
What test?
Right now, I have a single Tomahawk missile without a true nuclear warhead. I intend to test it farther up the coast on that miserable settlement of mutants and halfwits that Shauna called home. I'll miss their weekly tributes from the sea, but I'll soon be able to afford whatever cuisine I desire.
You'd chill them all as a bastard test?
Well, it wouldn't be much of a test otherwise, now would it?
What if you don't find any nukes in here?
The odds were slim that missiles for a submarine were down here, but then again, this was the first time that Ryan had found a redoubt at a military base. Any kind of stockpiles might be within.
No nukes, no test. I hardly intend to use my lone missile until I have more of them. Now, stop stalling and open the door before I have Jonesy start to break your fingers as an inducement.
Ryan had no choice.
3-5-2. That's it?
That's it.
The door began to rise in a swift, steady motion.
So simple. 3-5-2, and the door opens. I had come down here before at night and wondered what the right combination might be. I tried an infinite number, each one randomly generated on a pocket comp so I wouldn't repeat myself. Now I learn my conjectures were always one number too many. The sectors above ground throughout the base require a code of 4 numerals to all high-security sectors. Even if I had indeed stumbled onto the right pattern unknowingly, I would have always transmitted one number too many.
Life's a bitch, ain't it?
Then, Ryan fell flat on his face, as if he had tripped over a hidden wire or string. At the same time, he kicked out hard, smashing a boot heel into Speck's kneecap. The weapon that Speck carried was dropped to the floor and forgotten. Ryan rolled to the left, managing to snag the carrying strap of the fallen AK-47 with his feet.
Go ahead, kill the bastard! We're in!
The Admiral leapt into the doorway and got out of the way as Jonesy pulled the trigger. Jonesy didn't even hesitate over the accidental killing, but he did when Ryan did a most unexpected thing. Still unable to get his hands on the AK-47 that was tangled in his feet by the strap, Ryan instead hurled the rifle at Jonesy's face with all of the force his lower legs could muster. Jonesy stumbled backward, falling flat on his backside, directly in the doorway of the redoubt. Ryan moved at a blur, and from a kneeling position, sent a roundhouse right into the man's already bleeding mouth. Before Poseidon could step back out, Ryan snatched up the AK-47. The Admiral retreated inside, farther away from the door.
Carter! What are you doing out there? Damn you!
Ryan sprang to his feet and hit the keypad a second time.
You wanted in, and now you've got it. Enjoy your stay, you cold-hearted son of a bitch.
As the door slid down farther, the hapless Jonesy was caught on the floor at waist level.
I owe you for those shots to the kidneys.
Earlier, after the initial entry into King's Point at approximately 6 o'clock, the captured Edgerton had decided to play hero and alert the guard. Before the sec man could press the panic button, JB had fired a burst at him through the obsolete in the Land Rover. At the sound of gunfire, Edgerton had hit the gas and taken the wagon to a swerve, knocking down part of the guard booth in a crash of wooden glass and causing Ryan to shift in his position in the passenger seat. Edgerton opened his driver's side door and jumped to the pavement, his legs puffing as he sprinted for safety.
Help! Somebody help! Intruders!
As Edgerton fell on his side like a dropped rag doll, 3 more sec men came out from a second wag that had been parked in a motor pool off to one side of the guard shack. Ryan and Shauna broke away, diverting the sec men's fire and giving J.B. Mildred and Alan Carter a chance to escape, maybe to salvage something from the mission. What the trio couldn't know was that Ryan decided being captured alive wasn't so bad. What better way to see the leader up close and personal? The other 3, who remained free, had been forced to hide until nightfall. Under the cover of darkness, it hadn't taken very long to plant their dozen grens, all preset to go off at midnight. A fuel storage tower, the support beams over wheeled wags, there were many places to create chaos and diversion. Once things started to blow, everyone was to converge on where they had left the damaged wag, which was near the ruin of the gate in the guard shack. Ryan and Shauna, if they weren't able to get close to Poseidon, were to abandon their objective and go home if they could. The rest of the squad wasn't to wait, but instead pull out for the commune. Not that JB and Mildred were even considering that option. They would all leave together, one way or the other.
What do you think of this place, Millie? That far end is mighty nice with the lights and construction and all. Wonder why he hasn't fixed up the rest of the base.
Too busy trying to rebuild that leaky piece of shit submarine.
He's more vulnerable than I expected.
Mildred turned her head to look down from the rooftop they were using for hiding and observation.
Lots of empty buildings and not enough men to properly police each one. This base might actually be a threat if Poseidon had the manpower to take care of it.
Guess his plan to bring back the military isn't going as smoothly as he figured.
I want to take a look inside the base hospital. Men come in and go out on a regular basis. Must be a reason. They might have supplies we can take back, too.
Sure. We still got about 30 minutes before the excitement starts.
We can go in as we head back toward the wag. The hospital's right on the way.
Wait, what's that?
JB spotted movement on the roadway below. The wan figure with long red hair who had exited the squad building that housed the brig no longer even remotely resembled the killing machine that had run rampant only moments before. She looked ill, as if she wouldn't be able to stay on her feet long enough to make it across the paved roadway. She paused, hovering in the flickering light of a single working streetlight. The sky was dark now, and it would have taken a close inspection to see the traces of red on her silver-tipped cowboy boots and the drying ribbons of crimson on her clothing. Her hands were nearly clean since she'd found a bathroom with water in a sink and a bar of ancient deodorant soap. She'd quickly washed the blood from her hands and fingers, half sickened by her actions, necessary as they might have been. Across the street, on the roof of another one of the flat two-story buildings, the trio was watching the woman's progress, unsure of how to proceed. This was the first woman they had seen on the base. No one said anything as they waited, until the light revealed the color of her limp yet still luxurious hair. Those in hiding knew the figure, and the warning signs of fatigue she was now exhibiting. At least, two of the watchers did.
Dark night.
It's Christy.
Who in creation is Christy?
You'll find out soon enough. She's heading this way.
Mildred turned and approached the roof access door.
Come on! Come on! She won't be walking for long. I know she's called on Gaia, and we all know the toll that summons takes.
Who's Gaia?
Later, Carter. It's complicated, and we don't have time right now for another one of your lectures.
The friends were on the top floor of the two-story dormitory, and the room they were now in appeared to once have been a communal lounge for the enlisted men. Things were a bit messy, perhaps, but still comfortable.
Here, sit down.
JB removed his leather jacket and draped it around Christy's slumped shoulders. The collar of his worn jacket was made of silky black fur, similar to her own long coat, and she gratefully lay one cheek on the softness. She closed her eyes and immediately fell asleep.
She zonked. They must have got her high on dream or jolt or something.
Shut up, Carter.
Yeah, she's always like this when she summons up the,
How exactly did one explain Christy's muty power? The sensing of danger, the reading of emotions, that was easy enough. Everyone had heard of doomies and their prophecies. The power of the Earth Mother was something else entirely.
Summons up what?
I'll explain later. It's complicated.
A strong, well-developed woman, Christy always looked much smaller after a dance with the explosive force of the Earth Mother. JB was shorter than her unusual height, yet seemed to still tower over her now. Even her prehensile crimson hair was slack, limp, and unmoving.
Christy, are you all right?
The physician quickly checked her for any cuts, wounds, or contusions. Apparently, all of the blood on her clothing had come from other parties. Her skin was ice cold, and Mildred knew she was in a form of shock that could only be treated with rest. But there was no time for resting now.
I know who this is. Cawdor's woman. She's not dead?
Apparently not.
And the blood all over her isn't her own?
Nope.
You mean she killed whoever with her bare hands?
Uh-huh.
Cawdor must like him rough. Is there anything more you can do for her?
In here? Not much.
I'm all right, I think. But I've got one hell of a headache.
Sorry, but it's gonna get worse before it gets better. Those grand timers should start popping in 8 minutes, 32 seconds, give or take a second. The timers aren't exactly new.
We've got to find Ryan. Poseidon has him.
Dark night. Any idea where?
Yes, I can take you there. Jack's here, too, in the hospital.
Let's get Jack first. We might need the extra hand.
Hot damn! But is this a night for resurrections or what? We might just make it through this yet.